This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I, Maxwell E. Snavely, being of sound mind and body, do hereby bequeath the following. To my wife, Rose, who spent money like there was no tomorrow, I leave $100 and a calendar. To my sons, Rodney and Victor, who spent every dime I ever gave them on fancy cars and fast women, I leave $50 in dimes. And to my other friends and relatives, who also never learned the value of a dollar, I leave a dollar.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and are you investing with emotions or data? Today, we dive into how to clear the emotional deck and let data drive your decisions with professor of marketing at the New York University Sloan School of Business and successful investor, Scott Galloway. In our headlines, speaking of emotions, how is your 401k performing? We'll take a lesson from a recently settled lawsuit about how to better manage your own assets. Plus, we'll hear why a stacker said, I'd better call Saul, C-Hi, and OG. And, of course, I'll share some phony trivia. And now, a guy who's really photogenic and OG!
Hey there, stackers. No, I didn't write that open, but that was a nice one, Doug. And actually, we just got our photos back, and I gotta say, everybody has said just how photogenic OG is. Like, seriously. I know, Doug, I was thinking the same, but...
Did you show them only to his team members? Because I think he's got performance reviews coming up.
He must. He's one handsome dude sitting across the card table from me. How are you, Mr. OG?
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't be better. So excited about being here. Thanks for having me again.
Did you hear any genuineness at all in that response?
Are we having him here?
Thanks for showing up to my podcast, guys. How's that?
That's more like you. Oh, we thought you were having a critical illness right there. That's more like you. You know, we got a great show today, guys, because if you want to get wealthy, if you are a saver or you're somebody who wants to do better in your career, Scott Galloway is a phenomenal guy for career advice. You've seen him everywhere. His technology-based podcast with Kara Swisher, the Rico podcast, was just called the number one podcast at South by Southwest. So congratulations to them. However, he's not talking about technology-related stuff, market-based stuff. He's talking about you and what you need to do to get ahead. So if you have never heard Scott Galloway before, you are in for a treat. It's the second time here. And I think we got more letters last year, OG, about Scott Galloway's appearance than any other. Plus, if you're saving into a retirement plan at work, got a headline that hopefully will help you concentrate on the right stuff. But you know what we have before that, OG?
Oh, I'm going to guess that we are going to kindly ask that maybe just stick around and pay attention to a couple of these sponsor spots.
This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones and to see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. Thank you for helping us keep this podcast free for everybody. Scott Galloway coming up next. We're diving into the algebra of wealth with Professor Galloway. But first, a big headline for those of you with a retirement plan.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
And I hope everybody has a retirement plan. Maybe you don't have a workplace plan, but I hope that you're putting a plan together for retirement. This piece comes to us from Investment News, and it's written by Emil Halaz. Emil writes, AllianceBernstein 401k lawsuit booted. It's been a long time, OG, since we've talked about one of these 401k lawsuits. For a while, I feel like we were cranking on these as lawsuit after lawsuit came up, and some were legitimate, added things like target date funds to 401k plans. And we also saw more choice inside 401k plans. However, this one brings up a little bit different piece of the prism. AllianceBernstein this week, Emil writes, defeated a lawsuit over the use of its own products in the company's own $1.3 billion 401k, and the result has lessons for other plan sponsors. I think, by the way, the reason I want to talk about this is not other plan sponsors. It has lessons for participants. Emil writes, on Monday, the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York dismissed the plaintiff's claims without prejudice, meaning they can file an amended complaint to address the legal shortcomings within 30 days. The lawsuit filed in 2022 failed to show that the asset manager could have breached his duties of prudence and loyalty, and it did not successfully allege any prohibited transactions, the court stated. So what happened in this case, OG, is that AllianceBernstein, their own 401k, used their own products. And specifically, participants in this lawsuit said that the Lifetime Income Strategy Fund, the target date fund that was out there, was the default option. If you decided to put money in, but you didn't tell them where to put it, they would automatically put it in this low-grade target date fund.
Yep.
The interesting thing about this lawsuit was that AllianceBernstein won because they waived their management fees because it was their own fund, number one. And number two, even though the plaintiff said, well, hey, it's still assets under management for you guys, it was 0.2% of AllianceBernstein's total assets under management, which the court actually talked about. First of all, OG, let's talk about this idea of proprietary assets, which means, you know, it's your 401k, it's the General Motors 401k, and you've got GM stock in there, or it's AllianceBernstein's 401k. They've got AllianceBernstein run funds in there. Do you have a problem with the home team having their own product inside the 401k?
I don't. I even wonder, like, who are the people that started this lawsuit? Like, I have an idea. I'm going to sue my own employer, see how that goes over for me.
I might win the lawsuit, but I might lose the next time there's downsizing.
Yeah. And hey, why did you leave AllianceBernstein? Well, I filed a lawsuit against them.
As one does.
Okay, cool. And thanks for your honesty. And I try somewhere else, right? You know, if you're a fund manager, a lot of fund managers are required to have a certain amount of their personal net worth into the fund that they manage. So if you're, you know, taking it a step further, you're an AllianceBernstein fund manager, you manage the large cap growth fund or whatever they've got, or are on that team, you have to have some of the vast majority of your net worth in investable net worth into that fund. And that's not any different than an executive at a company, right? I mean, if you're the CEO of Disney or you're in the executive team of Procter & Gamble, you're expected to have a decent amount of your personal net worth tied up into that company, because then you're kind of all rowing the boat in the same direction.
Eat your own cooking.
Yeah. And a lot of times these executive comp plans have those restrictions. You've got to keep X dollars. You've got to keep X things. If you're a board of directors member, you know, at a publicly traded company, they pay you in stock and they ask you to keep a certain amount there. Then they give you all these restrictions around when you can sell, when you can purchase it, the disclosure that you have to do in advance of doing that. So I don't think that it's completely unheard of to require, and in this case, they're certainly not requiring it, but if you want to participate in the plan, if all of the options were AllianceBernstein plans, it's a de facto requirement. I don't think it's completely off-putting to say, this is what we do. Like, if you don't believe in the work that we do and you don't believe in our outcomes for our clients, then maybe you should find another place.
Yeah, I like the fact that they waive the management fee. I mean, to me, that shows good faith.
Yeah, 100%.
We want you to experience the cooking that we do here at AllianceBernstein. You work for AllianceBernstein. Use our stuff. Try it out.
And it's going to be less expensive. Yeah. We can bring in another, you know, we can bring in BlackRock or we can bring in Fidelity, but they're going to charge you more money. So this is actually better for you. Now, of course, what happens is they look at performance and go, well, hold on a second. In this little sliver of time, you know, my performance was worse and I should have picked, but you can't predict that in advance. You don't know that into the future, right? So it's hard to justify. Wouldn't the risk also be the other way? Like, hey, we open it up. You've got 32 different options. And you go, well, how come you didn't let us use AllianceBernstein stuff, man? You guys killed it.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, I mean, it's a double-edged sword.
Well, it is funny you say that, OG, because the second half of this complaint, this lawsuit, goes directly in that direction. When people evaluate their 401k, what drives you up a wall when people are evaluating their fund performance?
Well, I mean, if I asked the average person, how do you pick your fund options? So if you started a new company and you're like, all right, I need to pick my fund, you know, my allocation, I would venture to say the vast majority of people sort by performance over periods of time. They'll sort by the 1 year performance, the 5 year performance, the 10 year performance, the 15 year performance, and go, I've seen that name a couple of times at the top, I'm going to use that one. That's the default way of selecting options.
And if they're comparing that performance against anything, what's the thing that drives you up a wall that people compare the performance to?
Well, they're comparing it against potentially either the other things in the fund or an unrelated index of some kind and saying, well, this fund sucked. And it's like, well, yeah, you're comparing the bond fund to
the S&P 500,
you know, the tech, you know, the NASDAQ. Of course, it's going to be different.
In this court, they brought in all kinds of experts in this court case. They talked about skillful ways to benchmark your portfolios. And this was part of the reason AllianceBernstein won as well. Listen to this. So the plaintiffs also allege AllianceBernstein acted imprudently as the plan sponsor by retaining investments that underperform benchmarks during various periods of time. However, and this is a quote from the document, the alleged underperformance is not of sufficient duration or magnitude to create an inference of misconduct, meaning just because it underperformed some of the time at random times does not mean that they did it maliciously. The court then said, quote, and I love this, virtually any investment vehicle can be said to underperform its benchmark depending on the time frame that is chosen. ERISA protects participants against imprudence. It does not, however, accord participants an insurance policy against market losses. Amazing.
Yeah. And like Peter Malouk said a couple of weeks ago, you virtually eliminate all of your market losses if you just give yourself enough time. That's your insurance policy. Your insurance policy is invest in it for 25 years or, you know, statistically 20 years and don't performance chase and you will be handsomely rewarded.
Stop comparing your return to an index that has nothing to do with your goal. I think that's number one. The ridiculous. I could have just picked the S&P 500, people say. Well, number one, in a lot of cases, you should be picking the S&P 500. But number two, what the hell does the S&P 500 have to do with your goal? Like, what? How much money do you need to save? What rate of return do you need to reach your goal? Pick funds based on that. Use tools like Morningstar to find the best tool to help you get there.
I think there's a great comeuppance. Can I say comeuppance coming? Is that
comeuppance?
That's redundant.
Hair too?
That would be redundant. Yeah.
Imminent comeuppance.
Okay. That works.
Imminent? Yes.
That works.
I don't know that it's imminent, but there's a whole group of investors who have invested since the recession, call it 2010, 2009, and have been handsomely rewarded with being invested in large U.S. tech companies. I mean, insanely handsomely rewarded to the tune of 400-500% returns. And at the expense of all other asset classes. That's not saying that everything else hasn't done well also, but the disparity between large U.S. tech companies, aka the S&P 500 as of late, and large value or international growth or value or small growth or value is the largest disparity that it's ever been. And I think we're losing sight of the fact that there is market cycles that happen, and there's periods of time where different asset classes perform at different, you know, rates and different cycles. And I think we're getting very close to kind of that tipping point where just the general advice of going, well, just put it on the S&P because you can never go wrong. And it's like, Joe, you and I remember 2000 through 2007, you know, the market was up during that time, but it was pretty blah. I mean, what was the phrase? Was it the 2000s, the lost decade, where literally you made no money?
Nothing.
In large growth over that period of time. So, you know, I'm not certainly forecasting that and saying that that's, you know, what's on the horizon. I'm just saying that you got to be careful when everything that you're reading or everything that you're hearing or everything that you're believing is all pointing you in one thing. There wasn't too long ago when everybody said real estate was the only place to be. And then we promptly had, you know, 50% losses in residential real estate. I mean,
I got a wonderful email from a stacker who I encouraged to call into the Haven Lifeline because, and it's on this topic. He read J.L. Collins, The Simple Path to Wealth. And by the way, J.L. Collins, Simple Path to Wealth, wonderful book, highly recommend it. But it's called The Simple Path to Wealth, not The Optimal Path to Wealth or The Most Efficient Path to Wealth. But when you're first starting out, he recommends the Total Market Index. Buy a little bit of everything. You're buying small companies, mid companies, international companies. Mm-hmm. You're buying companies, well, not international, you're buying multinational companies. Yeah. But you're buying a good chunk of a lot of the stuff. This stacker said he had a problem with that. He's like, I prefer the S&P 500 and large growth. And I wrote back, of course you do, because you're looking at the short-term results. There is going to be a butt kicking for people that just look at short-term results. There always has been. I don't know when it's going to happen, to your point, but it's going to happen again. So there are real people listening to the show, OG, who are thinking exactly what you're cautioning.
Oh, that's a bit of a stretch. Real people listening to this show?
whoa, easy.
Okay. I don't know what color the sky is in your world, Joe.
How but is what, she related to mom?
But what? So you say short-term results. What is short-term as you were on that rant?
Well, this is the scary thing because, Doug, it looks like long-term, right? I mean, OG, it totally looks like long-term. We're looking at the last 10 years. And you go, well, it's 10 years. That's a, yes, it is a long time. But just like we had 10 years of the S&P doing nothing, so everybody gave up on it, now we have the last 10 years of the S&P 500 doing everything. And so people are like, forget the total market index. 10-year, quote, long-term period, it kicks its ass. You're asking for trouble.
Over long periods of time, we know that the S&P averages somewhere between 9.9 and 10.1% a year. And you say, well, how is that possible if the last, you know, 12 years since 2009, the S&P has averaged 13, and that doesn't include 2023 numbers. That only includes 2022 numbers or through 2022, where the market was down 20%. And it's in over that 13-year period, it still averaged 13.1. And so you go that 13-year period, averaging 13%, including a minus 22 in there, and yet the overall return moved 0.1%. That's got to tell you something in terms of your, you know, just kind of thinking about how this works over long periods of time. It's like, it kind of means in my mind that there has to be some other end to that pendulum. It doesn't mean it's going to radically swing. I don't know. But I think prudence would suggest that it can't always be one particular thing forever.
We're saying it. Mentor Peter Malouk a few weeks ago said it. We have had another amazing gentleman on the show a couple times. Paul Merriman has said it.
Never heard of him.
No idea. I think it's really important to divorce your benchmarking from the S&P 500. Forget, base it on your goal, stackers. Don't base it on the S&P 500. You know what? If you want to dive even deeper into that and assorted links from different places we've curated, Kevin Bailey writes our 201 newsletter that will come out tomorrow on this very topic. So if you hurry, you can get that one. StackingBenjamins.com/201 signs you up for the 201, comes out twice a week and does deep dives on these very topics we discuss, so that if you're going to put these into action, you can go even deeper on those topics. Speaking about going even deeper, our mentor today is the Scott Galloway. You've seen him rock it on Bill Maher. You've seen him all over the internet with comments that I often agree with, smartest man in the room stuff. A guy who's not afraid to tell you exactly what he thinks. Very Gordon Ramsay-ish personality. A lot of fun to talk to because he doesn't mince words. Scott Galloway, happy to mentor you and beat you around a little bit if you're somebody who's not taking yourself seriously. That's who we definitely want you to learn from. He's coming up with the algebra of wealth. Let's get rid of emotions. Let's begin thinking in terms of how do we boil this down to a very simple formula to success? That's what Galloway's all about. He's coming up next, but as a way to get there, the guy who's also no BS ever.
I'm a little hurt. Neighbor, I mean, Doug, that whole intro, I really thought you were going to, right up until the very end, I thought you were going to say Neighbor Doug, and then you said Scott Galloway.
Well, the both of you. The both.
The both of you. Yes. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. On this day in 1888, George Eastman founded the Eastman Kodak Camera Company. A former bank clerk, Eastman changed modern photography forever with the release of his first camera, the Kodak No. 1. Unfortunately, Eastman died in 1932, barely missing an opportunity to be a guest on Stacking Benjamins. While the Kodak No. 1 was compact and lightweight, it came loaded with what was then a huge 100 exposure roll of film. I've got more selfies on my phone than that. They've all been taken by request, of course. They're all just too good to delete. One day, far into the future, I'll be old and wrinkly, maybe, and I know people are going to want to see how I became a local legend. History will tell the full story, and I've got it all saved on my phone. Now, people spend their entire days taking photos and videos of seemingly everything within their line of sight, just in case everything suddenly turns to dust. You can't be too careful. Today's trivia question is, like two great tastes that taste great together, at some point someone said, hey, why don't we combine the phone with a camera? So let's make that the question for today. When was the first camera phone released? I'll be back right after I set up my new ring light. I'm going to do a photo shoot wearing all the different Stacking Benjamins t-shirts. And once those are up on the site, I bet we'll sell out of them in a day. Tops!
Well, if you're new to Stacking Benjamins, you may not know that I've tried out a lot of personal finance apps. I like to be a guinea pig and try out all these things, so I know what I'm talking about when it comes to what's helpful and what isn't helpful. And the app that I've used the longest has been Monarch Money. And it's because Cheryl and I, my spouse, were able to collaborate together. We can work on our goals together, and our budget and our goals are right next to each other on the app. It is clearly the next generation of personal finance app. So what is it? Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, because you're a stacker, you'll get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. I love the fact that we get to collaborate. I love the fact that it's customizable. And I also love that it's this ad-free privacy you can trust. They never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch myself, I totally get why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, because you're a stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial to try it out like I try out many different apps. And this one was sticky for me because, well, you'll see when you try out the 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. That's monarchmoney.com/Benjamins for your extended 30-day free trial. Well, you know, when I think about Navy Federal, I think about the veterans that have done so much for our country. And I also think about some of our active service members. Want to say a special shout out to My nephews, Colin and Nathan, who are both in the Navy. Colin is stationed outside Seattle, Washington on a submarine. And my nephew, Nathan, is in South Africa as an air traffic controller. And in Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants you also to celebrate members, many of whom go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. It's all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their family are eligible for Navy Federal membership. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see all of their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Well, don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment's the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money's breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money in the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Hey there, stackers. I'm photographer and Stacking Benjamin's resident model, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. When George Eastman started his camera company, he invented the word Kodak as its name. Why? Because he thought his name would be impossible to pronounce. I'd like to talk to the person who found Eastman to be too exotic of a name. Today's trivia question is, when was the first camera phone released? The answer, while the iPhone seems to have launched a generation of amateur photographers, the very first camera phone was not that, but a Kyocera phone / camera, which was released in May of 1999. And now let's meet today's mentor, and if you've never heard him, buckle your seatbelts, it's Scott Galloway.
I'm super happy he's joining us again at the card table. Scott Galloway's back. How are you, my friend?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Mother's Day is coming up in about a month, and your new work, The Algebra of Wealth, has your mom, Scott, all over it. Can you talk about your mom and the importance of your mom in your life?
Wow, I wasn't expecting to start there. Yeah, Joe, I don't know your background. I was raised by a single mother, a single immigrant mother who lived and died as secretary, and I describe my mom and my life up until the age of 25 as a light of my life, and it was me and my mom against the world. We didn't have a lot of money, but, I'm here with you for a few reasons. One, being born in America in the 60s was hitting the lottery. The generosity and vision of the regents of the University of California and California taxpayers, I got to go to UCLA for a total tuition of all 4 years, or actually 5 years, of $6,000. And then I got to go to graduate school at Berkeley for a total tuition of $2,000. And the acceptance rate, more importantly, was 76% when I applied to UCLA. Now it's 9%. So it was not only affordable, it was accessible. And then probably first and foremost, the irrational passion for my well-being of my mother. I'm a confident person. And I think a lot of that is I had someone telling me explicitly and implicitly every day that I was, that I was worthy. So played a huge role in my life. So I think that a lot of my views on social policy are shaped by the fact that anything that gets in the way of mothers not being able to look after their kids and, instill that sense of confidence and worth, that's kind of where I think it all starts in terms of, raising secure, healthy men. And there's actually some research showing that the kind of single point of failure for men actually is when they lose a male role model. And I didn't have that, but my mom went out of her way to make sure I did have male role models in my life. Anyway, long-winded way of saying, the reason I'm here with you is because of a lot of things were out of my control, but my mom and that irrational passion for my well-being kind of built a nice base. How about you, Joe? I don't know much about you.
except I'm working in mom's basement at 56 years old, you know, living the dream, Scott.
There you go.
No, I was very lucky. I had two parents that didn't know much about money. They knew the value of hard work. And what was interesting to me about this project is you say that a lot of us get trapped in this. You know, I mean, we've got this American way, right? We're going to work our butt off. And you make a big point of saying that, hey, working hard is great, but there's this hustle culture, which often leads us nowhere.
Well, you just have to keep your eyes on the prize. And that is all of this money, saving, you know, this stuff's important with GDP, innovation, growth. Yeah. All the things we talk about all day. This is a means, and the ends is deep and meaningful relationships. And people say money can't buy you happiness. That's bullshit. There's research that shows that happiness, generally speaking, is correlated to the amount of wealth you have. The good news is it tops out once you get to a certain level of economic security where you can afford a home, education for your kids, absorb an economic shock, good health care. And unfortunately, in a place like LA or New York, that's $700,000 or $800,000 a year. And there's also another myth. Billionaires are no less happy than millionaires. They're not any happier. But once you get to a certain point, and this is obviously a good problem, but once you get to a certain point, you got to realize that money is the ink in your pen, but it can make chapters burn brighter and maybe you can write new chapters, but it's not your story. And the research is definitive. The key to a happy life is deep and meaningful relationships. And I think of money as just something that makes it easier to engage in those relationships with an absence of anxiety. If I was economically strained, my ability to really connect and really enjoy my sons, it just would be harder to really engage in the joy of those relationships. It would be harder to take care of my father. I think it would inject strain into my marriage if I was economically insecure. But at some point, you got to realize, okay, the reason you work, the reason you save money, the reason you invest, the reason you're smart about money is such you can enjoy and engage in what is the whole shooting match. And that is deep and meaningful relationships. And then flipping back, it kind of goes full circle. I think a lot of the things I write about in this book, you talk about on your show all the time, the power of compounding, diversification, low-cost index funds. You know, it's kind of the basics. But what people don't talk about in financial literacy books is that if you look at the research, there's a bit of a myth that billionaires are these awful people lighting their cigars with $100 bills that crawl over others to become rich. And it's just not true. And it's unpopular to say it, but I stand by it. Generally speaking, very wealthy people have very high character because greatness and wealth are built in the agency of others. And the most financially disastrous things that can happen to you are a divorce from your spouse or your business partners. There are very talented people who make a ton of money and end up much less economically secure because they're hard to get along with and they don't bring generosity and forgiveness to the relationships. My dad made a lot of money and ended up poor at 65 because he was married and divorced four times. And there, nothing ruins a company like the partners getting a divorce from each other, not getting along. So if you want to be really wealthy or if you want economic security, the pillars of achieving that are bringing real character and generosity to your relationships. It's like, what's the key to wealth? I can give you an algorithm that's pretty straightforward, and I have that algorithm in the book. But the atmospherics for it are building a life of love and forgiveness such that people want you to win, acquire allies along the way. You have a real partner in your spouse who's pulling with you. You have people that want to give you the benefit of the doubt. You have people that want to give you investment opportunities, that want to loan you money, that want to see you win. And we don't talk about that enough in financial literacy books. Show me someone who's difficult and doesn't have an easy time maintaining long-term relationships. I'm going to show you someone whose economic security always trails their talent.
I don't understand why we call that a soft skill then, right? I mean, there's this term soft skills, communication. That seems to me to be, Scott, what we talk about more than anything on the show. The value of community, the value of successful communication, the value of getting yourself in the room and developing your own curriculum versus letting somebody else do it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I talk about this, the first part of the algebra or the equation, if you will, is focus. And that is, I think young people unfortunately get terrible advice at schools such as mine, NYU. We invite two types of speakers, really interesting, accomplished people and billionaires. And we've just decided that billionaires have access into life. And they always end with this bullshit advice, follow your passion. And the guy telling you to follow your passion made his billions in iron ore smelting. And what happens is kids conflate passion with hobby. And passions tend to be in industries that have a 90+% unemployment rate. And if you're in the 0.0001% of sports or fashion, fine, go for it. And people around you will let you know that you are, in fact, in the 0.001%. But when someone tells you to follow your passion, just be clear, opening a restaurant or a nightclub or being a DJ, those industries are incredibly difficult to maintain a living in. That's the bad news. The good news is that if you understand, if you have the discipline to get great certification, get a law degree, you understand tax code, you're disciplined, you can understand and articulate the intersection between tax and law and people's economics and organizations, and you're good with clients. The best tax lawyers fly private and have a broader selection set of mates than they deserve. And those things, the accoutrements, the relevance, the economic security, will make you passionate about whatever it is. Being great at something that affords you relevance and economic security makes you passionate about that thing. So your job is to find something in your 20s that you're really good at. Maybe you could be in the top decile at some point, maybe even the top 1% in an industry that has a 90%+ employment rate. Because you'd rather be in the top 10% of what I'll call an industry that maybe doesn't have the kind of curb sex appeal versus the top 1%. Being in the top 1% of sports or modeling or acting is not a good place to be. You have to be in the top 0.1%. Being in the top 10% of a profession or something that sounds a little bit more mundane is a life full of trips to Italy and taking care of your parents and having your weekends off and getting invited to cool events. So yeah, the return on investment of your human and financial capital is inversely correlated to the sex appeal of the industry you are thinking about going into.
You referenced earlier the algebra of money. I referenced it earlier as well. Your construct is several equations, but there's a couple really base equations at the beginning, and you have the first foundational equation is focus plus stoicism times diversification. Obviously, the entire book lays out all those things, but I'm just imagining you Thursday night in your writing session, you've got a glass of wine and all of a sudden you got some nice jazz music playing in the background and all of a sudden you stumble upon this equation. Tell me how that became the equation.
Well, first it's bourbon and it's Tom Petty, but I get your meaning. So look, I looked at, it's pretty research. I like to think I'm fairly research or data driven. You know, that kind of study that showed that you are the average of your five closest friends.
Sure.
That if five people hang out together, they end up the same body mass index. They end up the same political affiliation. They end up making the same amount of money usually, except where the variance is, one of them will end up economically secure, wealthy, and one will not end up fairly poor, and the other three somewhere in between. There's much more variance around where you end up. Wealth isn't about how much money you make. It's about the principles and strategies you apply to that money you make. And so essentially it's find your talent, find something you can make decent money at. That's what your 20s is about. And then it's about, when I say stoicism, it might not be the perfect word, but having the discipline to recognize that no one's thinking about your shit as much as you are. And that the ability to try and stiff arm the economy in America, which is constantly figuring out ways that are psychologically tested to hit you at the exact right moment to say you should upgrade from economy to economy comfort. Do you want to order some flourless chocolate cake with your pasta that you just ordered on Uber Eats? You really should order these really cool new Bombas socks because you ordered these tennis shoes in your Amazon cart. There are so many amazing ways to spend money in a capitalist society that it takes real discipline. Oh, you're at a club. You need to signal that you're a baller and increase the likelihood you're going to meet somebody. So you should really order a bottle of alcohol and don't order Veuve Clicquot, order the Dom. This is stupid. This is ruinous. Having the savings muscle, the discipline muscle, realizing that you can control your emotions and that these folks are trying to manipulate your emotions such that you spend money on stupid things that don't add value to your life, I call that stoicism. It's basically developing the savings muscle. Then it's diversification. And that is, we see so many screenshots of people who went all in on Solana or NVIDIA and are now rich. You know, I can prove to you mathematically. I mean, last year, the S&P was up 24%. Well, that's amazing. Well, not really. 70% of those gains were from just seven stocks. And you'd like to think you can pick the 1.4% of stocks that hit. Most of us can't. And most of us will never be able to do that. I didn't buy NVIDIA. I couldn't figure it out. So you don't need to be a hero. Don't try and find the needle in the haystack. Buy the whole haystack, because while something going up, you know, the S&P has gone up, I think the last 15 years, 11% a year. Well, that doesn't sound like a lot. That means if you're smart enough to hold on to money and invest over 21 years, you're up 8x. And you don't need to be a hero. And the way I screwed up was I was never diversified. I was always overinvested in tech and my own companies. And when the dot bomb implosion happened, and then again in the great financial recession, I went from being wealthy to most definitely not wealthy. And it's psychologically very, very damaging. It really takes a toll on your mental health. And diversification is your Kevlar. You can take a bullet to the chest. You can have a stock go to zero. But if you're diversified, you're fine. It's not a fatal injury. Any one stock goes up 50.01% of the days. But if you picked any five stocks in the S&P 500 and held onto them for 10 years, nobody has ever lost money. And that takes me to my last equation. Try and also ignore a flaw in the species. And that is, for the majority of our time on this planet, we haven't lived past the age of 35. So we literally can't calibrate time. You know, if you're 25, you're probably going to be on this planet for another 80 years. And the other thing I want to convince young people of is that it's going to go a lot faster than you think. It's going to be shocking how fast it goes. So if I could give you a magic box and say, relatively quickly, after you put $1,000, $10,000, $50,000 bucks in this box, if you put $1,000 in now when you're young, and that's hard, I'm not saying it's easy, I can get you $25,000 or $15,000 in an instant. And that instant might be 20 or 30 years, and that doesn't sound like an instant. But Joe, you know, you're kind of my age. Weren't we in our 20s yesterday? It just flew by.
Yes, it's gone.
Try and grasp what our instinct is not good at. Try and grasp that time is going to go really fast. And if you take advantage of that, your superpower as a young person is time. Do your best to find something where you can make good money. Focus on your talent. Find your talent, not your passion. See if you can gamify a savings muscle and start just saving a little bit of money, then a little bit more. Diversify low-cost index funds. Don't try and be a hero. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that you understand the market better than other people and can find the right stocks. You don't need to be a hero. Buy indices that are low-cost, and you talk about the importance of low fees. And then just let time take over. And don't fall into the trap I did. I've always been very successful, made a lot of money. Taking a company public, always made a lot of money. But I always thought, I'm such a baller, at some point I'm going to have a $10, $50, and $100 million payday. And I never really just sort of consistently saved and put into low-cost diversified funds. And where it left me was at the age of 42, when my first son was born, I was not nearly as economically secure as I had hoped or I thought I deserved to be given my retail or curb success, and was hugely just stressful and anxiety-ridden. And if I had just been a little bit more disciplined and saved a little bit of money from a young age, I wouldn't have found myself in that spot. And I got very lucky from that point forward, and now I'm economically secure. Or I shouldn't say I got lucky. I got very serious. When my first son came, you know, marching out of my girlfriend, I'm like, that's it. I make good money. I'm going to move to a low-cost state. I'm going to bank a ton of money. I'm going to diversify like crazy. And I got lucky that, you know, my son was born in 2008. These have been 16 amazing years. But saving money in what will be the decade or decade and a half of a bull market, which will happen over the course of your lifetime, it's just extraordinary how much money you can save and the comfort that can provide and also free you up to really focus on what's matter in your relationship. So that's essentially the equation. And if you make a ton of money selling an album or picking a great stock or selling your company, good for you. But why not have a plan B just in case you don't hit it big?
Let's dive into the stoicism piece a little bit, Scott. And I'm wondering how we change behavior effectively, because you write, if durable changes of behavior could arise from intention alone, right? We wake up, we're like, I intend to do X. And then, of course, we stick chocolate in our mouth and we don't do any of it. You write, if durable change of behavior could arise from intention alone, we keep our New Year's resolutions and never forget a thank you note. How do we change our behavior? Because most of us, as you know, not as many of us as we'd like, are on that stoicism bandwagon when, to your point, we're always asked to be upgraded. Just before this, I was on with American Airlines, you know, on the app, and they're like, hey, you could be first class for another $120.
Yeah, and it's not an expense. It's an investment in yourself. I mean, they're amazing at this. You're fighting.
You deserve it, Scott. You deserve it.
Yeah, you're fighting unbelievable technology that's been tested by psychologists. So recognize that you're fighting them. So look, I think it's a few things. The first is, what gets measured gets hopefully done. And that is, there's a great movie called House of Sand and Fog, and Ben Kingsley's in it. And he's a gas station attendant who leaves Iran after the revolution. And he's working in a gas station, he used to be a general. And he writes down everything he spends, including the Snickers bar. I think being a little bit neurotic about it as a young person helps you really try and understand where your money is going. Have a budget, take advantage of these apps, then gamify it. Round up, you know, with Acorns, round up your spending, cut out a cup of coffee, and gamify your saving. When I was a sophomore in college, when I was at UCLA, if I didn't make $3,300 over the summer, I wasn't enrolling in the next year in college. I needed that to pay my overdue fraternity bills and pay tuition. So I had 12 weeks to save $3,300. So me and six other guys in the fraternity who were all in the same position went to, you know, UCLA's public school. There was mostly wealthy kids in my fraternity, but a lot of us weren't. We gamified spending. And that is, we got together every night on a whiteboard and we had a contest around who could spend the least money. I spent $73 a week, my total living expenses. Now, granted, this is 1984, but our big treat, I lived on top ramen, bananas, and milk.
Wow.
And I'd go to work and I'd, you know, work 12, 14 hours a day, two different jobs, because I needed to save that $3,300. And then on Sunday nights, we'd cut this coupon out of the Daily Bruin and we'd go to this restaurant, you might remember it, called Sizzler, where they had $3.99 with this coupon, all you can eat. And me and the entire crew team would walk into this restaurant and eat for a week. I'm convinced we put this restaurant out of business. And here's the thing, when you're young, Joe, we still had a good time. We'd each throw in $2 and go get a case of beer and have a fun time and invite friends over and play our Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty albums and drink beer. And we had a nice time. You can have fun on not that much money when you're young. So one, use apps, measure everything, really gamify and start just as when you consistently work out, the muscle gets stronger. Really try and work out consistently the savings muscle and gamify it. And what's great is if you have a partner, a friend, it's like having a workout partner, a friend, a girlfriend, a spouse who understands the importance of savings and wants to play with you. Everyone talks about, okay, what ruins divorce? Well, it's lack of communication or it's infidelity. The number one reason that people file for divorce, specifically 70% of the filings are made by women, is economic strain. So being aligned with a partner around, okay, if we can figure out a way to put $1,000 a month aside and then $2,000 in 10 years, we're going to have, if the low cost index funds, we could have this and just be, just have a giant sigh. Having a partner and gamifying it and developing that savings muscle using technology, apps, but more than anything, specifics every day. I'm going to write down everything I spent. I'm going to round up on Acorns. I'm going to try and get $100 a week automatically into my public.com savings or investment account. Measurement, gamification, and then really committing to really developing a huge savings muscle and ideally gamifying it with a friend or a spouse.
It is not lost on me. That's the third time in this short time that we've been together, Scott, that you've talked about the power of surround sound, about the people you're surrounding yourself with. I was at the gym yesterday and we were all talking about, I could go to a gym and work out on my own, but you know, the reason I go is because I know my friends are waiting for me there. And if I don't show up, I'm going to get a text that says, hey, how come you weren't there today?
Yeah.
Absolutely super.
It's powerful. And the key is having other people, especially in your, what I'll call, I mean, friends do it really well, but I would say this is something that doesn't come up enough in people when they're thinking about trying to build a life together. Make sure, have an honest conversation. What is our expected economic weight class? Who's responsible for maintaining that economic weight class? And also, what is our approach to spending and saving? Because it's just so hard when you're not on the same page. And, you know, it creates just huge friction in the relationship. Again, it comes back to the key to wealth is really rooted in relationships.
I love the old Stephen Covey work about having a family mission statement. Like, Scott, you've had many companies and your company is a mission statement, yet we go home and we burn our money. We spend so much time on stuff that we're not focused on. I want to, speaking of focus, I want to focus on a different area, which is, you know, you talk about how these companies are so good at selling you things about upgrade and you deserve it. But you also make a point early in this work that financial companies are often talking about your number and about working toward retirement. And you have this very bold statement. Like, you're a guy that makes a lot of bold statements, but you have a very bold statement that you kind of, you want to burn this idea of working toward traditional retirement. How come?
Look, what you should be working towards is at some point your work becomes something you enjoy versus something, it's a want versus a need. I get to do exactly what I want professionally. I work as much, I don't work 60 to 80 hours a week anymore. I work 40 to 60, but the difference is I used to work 60 to 80 hours doing that I didn't really love. I mean, I was good at it, but I'm not sure I really loved it. Now I just only do things I love. And it's because along the way, I developed those savings muscles and started getting economic security. Work used to be awful for most people. It really did. I mean, for all the, you know, the notion we're depressed and anxious, but the reality is the majority of men did hardcore, laborious, dangerous work 100 years ago. So the idea that at some point you would get to stop doing this literally backbreaking work, that was the end state. That's no longer true. If you're talented or you can save some money, you can start thinking about spending your days not working, but involved in an avocation that you really enjoy. But there is no finish line. The greatest increase in mortality for men is when they retire. When they lose their social network and their social connection and their purpose, you're never more likely to die versus where you were yesterday, your mortality rate, than when you retire. You add years to your life when you keep working. So the key is, how do you keep working or find purpose and do something that you really love? It might be nonprofit. It might be coaching basketball. It might be writing a Substack on a topic that you're passionate about. And here's the thing. If you develop that savings muscle, if you're smart about your investments, diversification, time, et cetera, you have the luxury of thinking, all right, my 9 to 5 is going to start to have more purpose and be a function of choice as opposed to a function of just need. And that's a gift. If you can figure out something, if you have the flexibility and the economic security such that over time, okay, I don't need to make as much money. I worked in investment banking right out of college. All of my bosses hated it. They all hated it. None of them enjoyed what I can't tell you one investment banker I worked with that really like thought, oh, this is awesome. But they were making so much money and they had let their lifestyle creep up to their income that they were sort of trapped. So I could see they were really working towards retirement. Get me out of here. Put me on the beach.
It's a horrible place to be.
That's okay. So you're gonna work your whole life and work, not enjoy your life as much until you're 65 and then hope you live another 20 years. So the idea is if you keep your spending low, at some point, maybe in your 30s or 40s, you can start thinking about, okay, the world of making less money but doing something I enjoy more is now open to me. That's an amazing feeling. It's liberating. And taking your days to something that are a means to an ends as opposed to your days become the ends. I absolutely love what I do. I don't discern between the weeks and the weekends. I could give a shit if it's Saturday or Tuesday. When I was working and I had to make money and I was doing something I didn't like, I remember by Thursday night, I'm like, oh my God, the weekend's coming. By Friday afternoon, it was yabba dabba doo. Thank God it's Friday.
Right.
And then I'd go crazy and drink a ton and have a ton of fun over the weekend. And by Sunday night, this dark cloud would start to come over my gulf. It's back into Vietnam again, you know, hand-to-hand combat in this shitty job called investment banking where I just hate what I'm doing, but I got to do it because I got to pay my rent. And just over the course of time, as I got some economic security, being able to kind of continue to work, but work in stuff where that's the key. You don't want to discern between the weeks and the weekends. That's the goal. That's the finish line. The finish line isn't stopping working. People need purpose. People need something to do.
The book is The Algebra of Wealth, and we just barely touched on it. Scott, as always, is just like last time, I had 67 questions. We got to 4 of them. But it's available everywhere yesterday, right?
It's available now. Yes, that's right. Thank you, Joe.
Last question for you. When I first came across your work for the first time, I remember seeing how blunt you were, seeing how you made these bold statements. You were able to reset and focus people on the truth. I enjoyed all that, but I'm like, this is just a very serious guy. As I've gotten to know your work over time, though, Scott, you don't get enough credit for how funny you are, big guy.
Go on.
Your book is so funny. Have you ever thought about developing like 5 minutes of stand-up? Because I think there are so many times when I think this guy is so, so funny.
You're being really generous, but, and this is a flex and I'm bragging, but it won't stop me. at South by Southwest, I host a podcast called Pivot.
Yeah.
And we won Best News Podcast from the iHeart Podcast Awards. And that was really exciting. And they ask you a question on stage and they said, and they always have a random question and you're on the spot and you know the cameras and they're like, what's the last award you won? And I sat there, you know what the last award I won? I won most comical in high school.
Did you?
Yeah. And I was a class clown. And since then I've avoided all awards until 40 years later, I won an award for a podcast. But I think that depressed, angry people are generally a little bit more funny because they they see the world as it is. Oh my gosh. I absolutely, the people I love listening to who soften the beach for me, whether it's a Jon Stewart or a Dave Chappelle, use humor as an effective tool. Also, I developed the humor muscle because I figured out as a guy who was not very attractive, that if you can make a woman laugh, there's a much greater likelihood that she will kiss you. So for me, it was just an ability to maintain some prospect that I might get to propagate at some stage.
Scott, thanks again for mentoring our stackers. I appreciate it. And good luck with your next activity.
Thanks, Joe. And congrats on your success.
Hi, I'm Derek. And when I'm not working on the hook for Joe's mom's next greatest rap album, I'm stacking Benjamins, baby.
I wonder how Scott Galloway really feels.
We'll never know.
If he quit hiding his feelings about things.
Stop beating around the bush, Scott.
I love that guy so much. If he could join us every episode, I'd be all for it. I'm like, yep.
Hold on. Him and OG together? Oh. I need a little bit of velvet on my hammers.
The new Ghostbusters is out. To use their classic line, don't cross the streams. No, please. Hey, time to shine a light on one stacker who said, you know what? I better call Saul, CI, and OG. This is the part of the show where we help another stacker, hopefully, get their financial house in order. Today, we're going to help Alex out, guys. So, Alex, how you doing, man?
Hey, Joe and OG, I'm not great at introductions, but I'm sure that Doug will fill this in somehow. I have substantial savings in my retirement account, and I could retire early. I've heard that it's possible to access retirement funds without penalty if I fill out the correct paperwork and let the IRS know that I've retired. Is this true? And if so, what are those forms? Thanks. Any help's going to be greatly appreciated. Later.
Oh, Alex, we're not going to make your day. We're going to make your year, hopefully, because OG looks like he can retire. So great.
It's a fun way to start a Wednesday. Like, yeah, I think I can retire. Yeah, so take this job and shove it. Don't mind. So how does he get money? Yeah, how does he get money out of his workplace?
I would do the thing before you start, OG. I would recommend, Alex, that you do the thing that we saw Kitty do in front of the entire economy audience a couple years ago. She wrote out her resignation letter, but then she created blanks and had the entire audience fill in the blanks for her. And they weren't very friendly, by the way, OG.
It's like ad libs.
It was totally ad libs.
That's
it
great.
Was totally a complete Mad Libs retirement thing. And she said she ended up turning it into her boss. And her boss was like, really? And she goes, well, let me tell you how I did this. And then she told him and he thought it was hilarious. But anyway,
it's great.
Yeah. Do a Mad Libs.
Be careful. You don't know exactly how that'll be received. Maybe do the real resignation and then go, this is what I was going to send you. Ha ha ha.
Yes. Right.
You know, so he gets to retire or maybe can potentially retire before, you know, the traditional 59 and a half age. I think that's what he's talking about here is I've got money in retirement accounts. I know about 59 and a half, which is where you can access your money penalty free. For any reason, you don't have to actually be retired, but after 59 and a half, you can take money out. Between 55 and 59 and a half, if you have money in your 401k, you can take that money out without penalty if you're separated from service. So you're working, you did your 30 years at, you know, XYZ Corp, and you retire, you're 55, you leave the money in the 401k, you can take it out. So this is not a rollover. You take the money out for your distributions without a penalty. So, you know, if you've got a pre-tax, you're going to pay taxes like normal, so on and so forth. If you want to retire before you're 55, then you have to do what's called SEPP, substantially equal periodic payments. And all of the rules are found in the IRS Rule 72T. That's what that is called or found. You just Google IRS 72T distribution or IRA distribution 72T. And there are so many rules about how to do this. So you definitely want to get help on getting this set up. But basically what the IRS says is if you're retired and retirees tend to have a level income, that's what you need to live on, then if you are going to take a level income out of your qualified plan until you're 59 and a half or 5 years, whichever comes later, then we will allow you to do those distributions without any penalty. So said a different way, let's say you're 45, you got $32 million in your IRA, and you're like, I need 10 grand a month. You can set it up, and you got to set it up with your CPA, with your financial planner. And so there's some rules around this, but you can set it up so that you receive $10,000 a month from your IRA. You're going to be taxed just like you would be, right? But you're not going to be penalized the 10% for being under 59 and a half. And that distribution will have to go until you're 59 and a half or 5 years, whichever happens longer. There are some very limited ways to amend it. So this is kind of something like it's irrevocable. Once you decide to do it, you can't say later, oh, I decided to go back to work. I don't need to do this anymore. There's some asterisk that you can use to plead insolvency or, you know, some extenuating circumstances, but they're very few and far between. So this is one thing you definitely want to make sure that you work through all the technicalities correctly, but it's totally doable. So do it. It'll be fun.
Super awesome.
Let us know how it goes. Yeah.
That is so great. And by the way, those SEPP rules, I'll second OG what you said, which is that it's not an easy calculation. There's different ways to do it. And I think also having somebody who's done it before to bounce off the different calculations, which one really works for you is a good thing. Because I don't know about you, while one calculation usually worked best for most people, there were times that people went, oh, I can do it that way instead. Like that worked out better. Also, if you have high cost options in your 401k or not enough to really give you a well-rounded portfolio, tell me if you like this or not, OG, but if you're over age 55, leave the money in the 401k that gives you the flexibility toward 59 and a half. Do a good job of that. Maybe leave a little bit extra or maybe a little bit more than a little bit extra in the 401k, then roll the rest of that to an IRA to maybe give you a little bit in some cases, a lot in other cases, more options, more flexibility, possibility of lower fees, more control. Give yourself the wherewithal to do whatever the heck you want to do in your financial plan. What do you think about that?
No, that could be a good idea. Obviously, you want to read through your plan document, make sure that that doesn't have to be all or nothing. You know, some companies are very particular about kind of an all or nothing decision. But for most plans, that's doable to do a little bit. It gives you more flexibility. The other thing you can do with the SEPP is create separate IRAs. So instead of having all 32 million in one bucket, you could say, well, I'm going to have, you know, one bucket that's got a million in it, one bucket that's got 31 million in it, and then do the SEPP with just the $1 million bucket. So you're not exposing all the dollars to the calculations, like you mentioned, and to all the strict rules that you have to follow.
Are you saying Alex only has $32 million?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just guessing based on his confidence. Yeah. I mean, based on his confidence, I'm guessing that's kind of where he's probably landing.
Alex, congratulations on the early retirement. Great job. And love to hear that. Nice work. And you know what? We were going to send you some swag anyway, but we're sending you some swag as a thank you for calling in, celebrating with us. And also, hopefully we helped you answer that big question of being able to get money early. Hopefully we helped a lot of our stackers who were maybe in a similar situation. So thank you. StackyBenjamins.com/voicemail. If you'd like us to give you good news as well about whatever you're wondering about, the best news is that there is a place that you can call. Better news is if you're not worried about one little problem, I wouldn't call Alex's little, I think that's a big issue. But if you're worried about the fact that you don't really have a great financial plan for the future, OG and his team are taking clients. So the way to get on their calendar to see how they can interface with you to make better retirement and better financial planning decisions in the future, StackyBenjamins.com/OG. So go to that link and make better decisions in the future. All right. That's going to do it for today, except for my favorite episode, because speaking of the community, this is where we involve the community. Doug, We have taken, we gave people about 3 weeks to vote on our joke off, which is where we took math, we took jokes, we took these two things, we put them together, almost like in your trivia, the phone and the camera. We took jokes and math and put them together, and we're down to our final four.
God, it feels like we've been joking off forever, doesn't it?
Which is the best feeling.
Since you were 11.
It's a little abrasive at this point.
Like, when is this going to end?
Oh, my God. Yeah, so should we remind everybody what the final four jokes are?
Let's dive in and tell everybody who the winners are, because this, unless you're in the Facebook group, you'd have no idea who won this. And I bet people have been waiting for 3 weeks with bated breath. Like, please tell me. Having so much trouble with this. So top bracket, we had the number 9 seed against the number 4.
Right. So as usual, we're going to give you the higher seed. I'll just remind everybody, the 9 seed, little upstart, just, you know, the fan favorite because it's a high seed. I saw my math teacher with a piece of graph paper yesterday. I think he must have been plotting something. From Jen with two N's.
And then Susie, spelled with a Z, like Foreman. The Susie, yeah. Number 4, pretty hard time for me financially. I wasn't able to pay the bills to my exorcist. And as a consequence, I have been repossessed. This one, I was sure the exorcist joke was going to win. Not the case.
No, it didn't. Because the fan favorite, the upstart, the Cinderella story, number 9 took this matchup. So we've got a math teacher. Wow. We got graph paper. We got plotting. Jen is in the championship game. Nice job.
Congratulations. We're going to send Jen an email and a prize package for going yet another step. I feel like I've been talking to Jen nonstop. Down at the bottom half of this bracket, another number 11 versus number 7.
In our Midwest region.
Melvin and Jeff.
An even bigger Cinderella story, number 11 versus a number 7. Let's have it with the number 7, Joe. Let's hear what you got.
What's the difference, guys, between taxes and taxidermy? One's cruel and inhumane. The other's dealing with dead animals. For all of us that just finished, you know, taxes about 10 days ago. It's a little close to home.
It makes me chuckle. All right. Number 11, college is the opposite of kidnapping. They demand $100,000 from you or they'll send your kid back. That was from Melvin.
Melvin in Valdosta, Georgia. But by the way, how the hell was that the number 11 seed? Because that's not a number 11 seed joke.
What idiot did the seedings?
I had some more. That's the seedings experts calling. They want that person fired. That's exactly who's calling. All right, guys, go to the Facebook basement group. We've already had a lot of voting on these the last couple weeks. You can get your vote in here at the last second. StackYourBenjamins.com/basement gets you there. And all the other general hilarity questions people ask each other. Somebody was talking about being not motivated a couple weeks ago. I like that discussion. Yeah. What do you do that to kind of get your groove back? Yes. Go talk to Scott Galloway. He'll slap you around.
Some people are into that.
I'll tell you, he will. Like, I got on that interview, as you heard. I woke up and I'm like, whoa, hey, yeah.
Smelling the coffee, facing north.
All right. I think that's all we have time for today. Thanks to everybody, by the way, for who played the joke off this year. We'll bring that back in another decade. But for now, Doug, wrap this thing up for us. Lots of takeaways. What are the big ones?
Well, Joe, here's what's on our to-do list today, whether or not we photograph it. First, take some advice from Professor Galloway. Take the complex and simplify it into a simple equation. What are you hoping to accomplish? Who has succeeded in that area previously? Create an equation that boils life down to its most essential pieces, and then start working. Second, use this from our headline. Evaluate your 401k plan against your goals, not against some other benchmark. Your benchmark should be your goal. Don't have a goal? How are you going to know when you're actually succeeding or not? And how will you know when you should change directions? But what's the biggest to do? I got to print all the photographs I've got on my phone. I got to have hard copies with me for when people start asking me for autographs. I'm sure that day's coming any day now on my path to international superstardom. Thanks to Scott Galloway for joining us. You'll find his new book, The Algebra of Wealth, wherever books are sold. Want to help the show and press the easy button? Use our show notes link to order it through Amazon. It'll both help you and you'll support the podcast at no additional cost. Thanks to everyone who uses our Amazon link already. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2024, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy. Our producer is Karen Repine. Karen and Joe get help from a few of our neighborhood friends. You'll find out about our awesome team at StackingBenjamins.com, along with the show notes and how you can find us on YouTube and all the usual social media spots. Come say hello. Oh yeah, and before I go, not only should you not take advice from these nerds, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Duggan. We'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show.